Hello, thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. As we mentioned last week, we launched a brand new YouTube channel called Paranormally Listed. So far, we've done 3 videos, 3 cases of violent poltergeist, 3 cases of spontaneous human combustion, and 3 people who predicted their own deaths. Our upcoming videos are going to be about houses that were made famous by horror movies, killers who were haunted by their victims, and killer cryptids. You should subscribe so you'll miss any episodes. You can find it at youtube.com/paranormallylisted. But for today's episode of Into the Killing, we're going to be talking about cases that were solved with help from the VDOC Society. Just so I don't misrepresent them in any way, I'm going to read a description of the group from their own website. The Society was founded in 1990 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to further the resolution of long-unsolved homicides. It is made up of volunteer forensic experts and investigators who serve as confidential consultants to assist law enforcement in solving difficult cold cases. Its members include profilers, criminologists, forensic experts, medical examiners, active and retired law enforcement agents, prosecutors, polygraph examiners, and others skilled in solving these cases. Our members act as confidential consultants to police agencies with investigative jurisdiction. We will become involved only when such an agency requests our assistance. The investigation remains under the full control of the investigating agency. Neither the Society nor its members seek public recognition or compensation for their work. According to NPR, the group meets once a month in an old Victorian dining room in downtown Philadelphia, and they discuss the cold cases over lunch. They got their name from Eugene Francois Vidocq, a Frenchman who lived from July 1775 to May 1857. When Vidocq was young, he was a criminal, but he reformed his life and he became a crime fighter. He is considered the father of modern criminology. The Vidocq Society caps membership at 82, which is how many years Vidocq lived. The members of the Vidocq Society believe that a fresh perspective on a case may be what needs to be solved. Based on the results, they appear to be right. Thanks to their assistance, many cases have been solved, and we'll look at 2 of them today. The first one happened in the middle of May 1991. At the time, the number one movie was the action thriller FX2, The Deadly Art of Illusion. It was a sequel to 1986's FX. The number one song in America was I Like It That Way, The Kissing Game, by R&B group High Five. At the time, 24-year-old Scott Dunn was living in Lubbock, Texas, with his 28-year-old girlfriend, Leisha Hamilton. Scott grew up in Pennsylvania, but he settled in Lubbock after serving in the Army. In the Texas city, he found a job he loved. He installed stereo systems in cars at an electronics shop. On May 13th, 1991, Scott attended a party with a date who wasn't his girlfriend. The date flirted with his friends. What his friends didn't know was that his date was a crossdresser and he had brought them as a prank. At the end of the night, his friends found out that the person flirting with them was a man and they didn't think it was funny. By that point in the night, Scott wasn't feeling well. He felt so sick he couldn't leave his friend's home. He had a crash on the couch. The next morning, Scott's living girlfriend, Leisha Hamilton, picked him up and took him home. On the morning of May 16th, Scott's friend was supposed to pick him up to take him to work. But when his friend knocked on his door, no one answered. 2 days later, Scott's father, Jim Dunn, received a call from Scott's girlfriend, Leisha Hamilton. Hamilton wanted to know if Jim had heard from Scott because she had not seen or heard from him since he was supposed to get a ride to work on May 16th. She said she left earlier that morning, and when she got home, Scott was nowhere to be found. Jim ended up filing a missing persons report. The police searched the apartment that Scott and Hamilton shared. Hamilton explained that she found something unusual when she came home and found Scott missing. Part of the carpet under the couch was missing. The police looked around the apartment and they found something unusual. In one of the corners of the bedroom, part of the carpet had been cut out and removed. It had been replaced with a piece of carpet that was cut out from under the couch. They also noticed some stains along the ridge of the carpet that had been cut in the bedroom. The stains were a rust color that looked like blood. They lifted up the carpet and saw that it was being held down with duct tape. There was another stain that looked like blood on the underpadding. On the cement floor beneath the underpadding, there was another rust-colored stain. They found more of the rust-colored substance on the baseboards. So the police decided to spray the corner of the bedroom with luminol. Luminol is a chemical that reacts with blood even after it's been cleaned up. The detectives were shocked by what they found. Blood had been splattered on the floor, wall, and even the ceiling. It was also clear that someone had tried to clean up the blood. Based on the amount of blood, the police were sure that something bad had happened in the room. It seemed like there was enough blood that someone may have died. Presumably, that person was Scott Dunn because it was his home and he was missing. The police thought that Scott was possibly killed in a drug hit. Scott had been arrested and convicted for possession of cocaine. But the crime didn't have the hallmarks of a drug murder. If it was a drug hit, the killer would have left the body there. They would have wanted people to know Scott was dead and how he was killed as a message to other people. The police also dug into Scott's personal life. Although Scott was living with Leisha Hamilton, he hadn't stopped seeing other women. He was dating several women and he was even engaged to a woman. A month before the murder, Hamilton apparently learned that Scott was engaged. The police wondered if Hamilton decided to kill Scott over his infidelities. Hamilton did have a criminal conviction for embezzlement, but she did not have a history of violence. After Scott went missing, Hamilton kept contacting Scott's father. She had a special request for him. When everything was settled, she wanted Scott's car, a yellow Camaro he had restored. Jim thought it was odd. He thought that Hamilton seemed to be more worried about the car than Scott. But Hamilton did suggest a suspect, a man named Tim Smith. Smith lived in an apartment close to Hamilton and Scott. It turned out that Smith didn't go to work on the day Scott disappeared. When the police went to interview Smith, they noticed that he was packing up to move. The detectives looked around his apartment and noticed a roll of duct tape on a shelf in a bookcase in the living room. They went into a different room, and when they came back into the living room, they noticed that the roll of duct tape was missing. They looked behind some books, and they found the roll of tape. They thought it was odd that he would hide the tape, so they collected the roll. A forensic expert compared the roll of duct tape to the duct tape found under the carpet in Scott and Hamilton's apartment. The expert was confident that the tape under the carpet came from the roll found in Smith's apartment. There were also green fibers on the side of the roll of tape. It was determined that they were carpet fibers from Hamilton and Scott's apartment. The police had a massive problem with the case. While they were sure Scott Dunn was dead, they didn't know the location of his body. At the time, in Texas, if the victim's body was missing, the murder charges couldn't be filed. Searches were conducted for Scott's remains, including cadaver dogs being brought to a landfill, but no trace of Scott was found outside of his apartment. Soon, the case went cold. A year after his son disappeared, Jim Dunn was watching TV, and he saw a news story about the VDOC Society. Jim Dunn met with one of the co-founders of the VDOC Society, Richard Walter. Walter agreed to help with the investigation. Walter was sure that Leisha Hamilton played a key role in Scott's disappearance. Walter sent the crime scene photos to a fellow VDOC member who was a forensic pathologist with Scotland Yard. The pathologist said that Scott died from several blunt force trauma wounds. He was attacked in the corner of his bedroom where the carpet had been cut out. Richard Walter then talked to the district attorney in Lubbock County. The district attorney told him they couldn't charge anyone with murder because they didn't have Scott's body. Walter argued that they did have a part of Scott's body. They had his blood. The district attorney agreed, and they said they would look into the case. The district attorney had a blood splatter expert examine the crime scene photos. The expert noted that the blood splatter went in three different directions. The expert concluded that Scott was probably struck four times, including the first blow that probably didn't draw blood. An expert also tested how much blood Scott would have lost. The expert concluded that the carpet was cut out around the stain, so he had a rough idea how big the blood stain was. He also knew that blood reached the under padding and the cement below the padding. So the expert recreated those conditions. Based on his testing, he determined that Scott lost 2 units of blood, which would have been enough to kill him. The district attorney was now sure that Scott Dunn had been murdered. Now they had to figure out who killed him and prove it. Once again, Richard Walter with the VDOC Society was able to help. He had learned that unidentified hairs had been found on the duct tape that was used to tape the carpet to the underpadding in the bedroom. He suggested that the hairs be examined. So the tape was sent to the FBI. The strands of hair were compared to hairs that belonged to Leisha Hamilton and Tim Smith. It was determined that both their hairs were found on the tape. Why else would their hair be on the tape under the carpet that was replaced, unless they were trying to cover up the murder? And why would they cover up the murder unless they were the ones who committed it? 5.5 years after the murder, in late 1996, Leisha Hamilton and Tim Smith were arrested for the murder of Scott Dunn. The investigators believe that the motive was straightforward. Hamilton was angry and jealous that Scott was seeing other women while living with her. They determined that on May 16, 1991, Scott was attacked while he was sleeping in bed. He was struck on the head at least 4 times with a blunt object. The murder weapon was never found. They believe that Tim Smith probably had romantic feelings for Leisha Hamilton. After the murder, Hamilton manipulated Smith and convinced him to help her dispose of the body and clean up the crime scene. In May 1997, Leisha Hamilton went to trial. She was found guilty and she was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Tim Smith received 10 years of probation. It was the first no-buy conviction in Lubbock County. In May 2012, 21 years after Scott Dunn went missing, his remains were found. A worker doing some repairs on a sewer line found his body in a shallow grave in his apartment complex. It turned out that the police did not do a thorough search of the apartment complex. When Jim Dunn was asked about this, he said, "The police just didn't do a thorough job of searching, and they're catching a lot of grief for it. That doesn't matter to me right now. All I've been through, the angst and the heartbreak for the past 21 years, I could care less. It's not going to help anything now." Scott's mother, Sue Dunn, said that locating his remains brings them peace of mind. An autopsy revealed that Scott had been killed by blunt force trauma wounds to his head. He was found wrapped in the vile bedsheet from his waterbed. So, he was most likely killed in his bed. He died just the way it was predicted by members of the VDOC Society. If Leisha Hamilton served her entire sentence, she would have been released in 2017. Her current whereabouts are unknown. At the time of this recording, she is 59 years old. Now for the second case, we're traveling back to the end of November 1984. The number one movie was The Actioneer, Missing in Action, starring Chuck Norris. The biggest song in America was the 1980s classic, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, by Wham. Deborah Wilson was 20 years old, and she lived with her parents in Woodbury, New Jersey. She was a junior mathematics major at Drexel University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Drexel University is only about 15 miles from downtown Woodbury. Wilson wanted to become an engineer. Wilson was passionate about music. She refused to get braces in high school because she thought it might lose her spot as first chair clarinet. On the night of November 29, 1984, Wilson was working in a computer lab in the basement of Randall Hall on the university campus. At about 1:30 a.m. on November 30th, Wilson called her mother and told her she was safe. According to computer records, Wilson stopped typing at 1:38 a.m. At 9 a.m., two students entered a stairwell in Randall Hall, about 125 feet from the lab where Wilson was working. They found her dead body. A coat was draped over her body. She was fully clothed, except for her socks and white Reebok sneakers. Her socks and shoes were nowhere to be found. It was determined that Wilson had been beaten with a blunt object and strangled with an electrical cord. Two bricks and a piece of lumber were found near her body. An electrical cord in the lab where she was working matched the bruising left on her neck. Unfortunately, it wasn't long before the case went cold. In 1992, 8 years after the murder, the detective on the case talked to the VDOC Society. They gave him a few suggestions on how to proceed with the case. One thing they said was to look for a suspect that had a shoe or foot fetish. The members of the VDOC Society thought it was odd that the only things that were missing were her socks and shoes. Her socks and shoes have never been found. Shortly after the presentation, the investigators looked into the history of one of their strongest suspects, a man named David Dixon. Dixon was 25 years old at the time of the murder. On the night of the murder, he was one of two security guards on campus. The detectives found out in 1979, Dixon was serving in the army and he was stationed in Korea. He broke into a woman's apartment and stole her shoes. He was arrested and sentenced to 3 months in jail. The police managed to get a warrant and they searched Dixon's apartment and a storage locker he rented. They found 20 pairs of white women's sneakers wrapped in plastic bags and 77 foot fetish videos. But Deborah Wilson's shoes were not among them. The police also searched Dixon's computer and they found a document called Fantasy. It was created on the 7th anniversary of Wilson's murder. The document was a pornographic letter addressed to a woman named Rochelle. In the letter, he references white Reebok sneakers. The police talked to a former co-worker of Dixon's and she said he had given her a letter. In the letter, he professed his love for her and he asked to have her sneakers. The police and the district attorney felt like they had enough evidence, so in June 1993, 9 years after the murder, 33-year-old Dixon was arrested. In his jail cell, he hung up pictures of women's shoes on the wall. Because of the pictures, his fellow inmates nicknamed him Dr. Scholl and Dr. Smell. David Dixon went to trial for the murder of Deborah Wilson in May 1995. The district attorney did not have any physical evidence. Instead, they argue that someone with a shoe fetish killed Deborah Wilson. Dixon had a serious shoe fetish and he was in the same building as Wilson on the night she was murdered. The defense agreed that Dixon had a shoe fetish, but that didn't prove he murdered Wilson. The jury deliberated for 5 days. They could not reach a unanimous decision and a mistrial was declared. David Dixon went to trial again a few months later in November 1995. The defense argued that Dixon was a nonviolent man with harmless fantasies. They argued that Wilson's boyfriend was a more likely culprit. A former cellmate of Dixon and a guard testified against Dixon. They both said that he boasted about committing the murder. The jury deliberated for 3 days. This time, Dixon was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. 61-year-old David Dixon is serving his sentence at SCI Mahanoy in Frankville, Pennsylvania. Thanks to the VDOC Society, the investigators focused on the shoe fetish aspect, which ultimately led to the conviction 10 years after the murder. The VDOC Society continues to meet, and hopefully, they will help solve more cases in the future. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Our producer, sound designer, and fact checker was Nell Cloutier. Don't forget to check out our new YouTube channel, Paranormally Listed. You can find it at youtube.com/paranormallylisted. If you are looking for more true crime stories, please visit our original YouTube channel, Criminally Listed. Just go to youtube.com/criminallylisted. Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for listening. Please take care of yourself and stay safe.